a nice hello from the sour vinegar and other flavors. Today we have Jason Lau on board. I hope I pronounced it correctly, Jason.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine.
Hello, Jason. Jason is, I guess, located in Istanbul in Turkey.
Yeah, that's correct.
And lucky wise, we have him today in our nice Sour Essig canteen. A warm welcome.
Well, it's good to be here. It's good to be joining you guys.
Yeah. And yeah, probably some of you mentioned noticed it already. So another podcast session we do in English because it's a mixed podcast. Some of the sessions we do in German, some we are doing in English. And as Jason is, I do not know Jason.
My German is not so good. My German is not so good.
What do you mean with not so good?
I mean non-existent.
Also sollten wir es nicht in Deutsch machen. Oh, sorry, so you shouldn't do it in German. Yeah, yeah. Jason, would you like to give some words about you, about your, how to say, where you're coming from?
Expertise, what is your background? Where you come, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So thank you very much, Ingo. My name is Jason. I am a partner in a consulting firm here in Istanbul, working primarily in this area we call entrepreneurial innovation. So kind of how do we blend entrepreneurial methodologies with the needs of corporate innovation. So my background is actually, you know, I live in Istanbul, but I'm not Turkish. I was born in Canada, grew up in the US, but I've been living here in Turkey for about 18 years now. My wife is Turkish and we decided to settle here in Istanbul. I've been involved with the Turkish startup ecosystem for over 12 years now. First starting just really working with startups, running accelerator programs, kind of helping startups kind of get off the ground, and tech startups, social startups, all kind of, you know, academic startups. And about 7 years ago, we switched over to, we saw this interest for corporations to say, hey, what are these startups doing, right? Why are they better at innovation than we are? Why are they able to come up with these new ideas and kind of beat us in some of these traditional areas? And so we were able to look at some of these entrepreneurial methodologies and say, how do we apply that inside the corporate setting? So that's kind of my background is really, I've done a lot of stuff with startups, now kind of taking what we did with startups and applying that in the corporate setting.
What is your experience? What is the most critical difference between driving innovation in startups compared to existing mid-sized organizations or where there is traditional processes, products or whatever?
Yeah, well, the biggest difference, I think a lot of times is when I talk to large companies, say, the problem with corporations is that they're not very good at innovation. And it's not like they don't do innovation, right? Everybody has a R&D arm, they have an innovation arm. You know, everybody's, you know, big companies are investing a lot of money in innovation. But if you guys know the classic book, The Innovator's Dilemma by Clayton Christensen.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think he summarizes it very nicely in the sense of, well, big companies innovate on an established business model, right? On the business model that they know. Because a disruptive business model actually disrupts their own business. And most companies are not really good at taking those kinds of risks, right? They're not willing to shoot themselves in the foot to be able to move to the next business model. And therefore, it leaves room for startups, smaller mm-hmm. companies, to kind of come in and eat up their market share. They don't see it as a threat initially because usually those startups are focused on less profitable, less ideal segments of that larger pie. What is the main difference is that corporations are really focused on primarily incremental innovation, right? When we talk about radical innovation, we talk about disruptive innovation, it requires a completely different mindset that unfortunately most corporations don't have. But startups are intrinsically designed to be disruptive, right? Or else they can't get a foothold in the market. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's really when you look at innovation, everybody's doing innovation. I'm not saying that corporations are not doing innovation, but they're too focused on just those small incremental changes, which is good in the short term. But in the long term, that's why you see the rise and fall of large companies.
What do you think should be, let's say, should be an attitude from a team in a bigger company to start as a startup or as a team to look into this direction? Or let's say, I just join a bit Ingo's question, what would be the right way for a bigger company to start to think about a team of they have the attitude in the right way as a startup for this big company?
So in kind of literature, they talk about this type of, to be able to adopt this type of entrepreneurial mindset, they call this, you know, the ambidextrous organization, right? Companies which are good at executing on their current business model, but also can, you know, look at and explore new business models at the same time. And most of the time, if you look globally, companies that do this well really have these as separate divisions, right? So you have, you know, the majority of your company, the more majority of your divisions focused on improving your current business model, because that's where the money is. But you have a separate division that's really focused on exploring new business models, and they're kind of separated from the organization. They're managed differently. The expectations are different. The KPIs are different, right? And when you can execute it separately, then I think that's where you say, I'm both executing on today, but I'm also exploring what's going to be happening tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds logical, huh? Because knowing from our internal business that, of course, having new ideas which probably are disruptive to existing customerships, sales team who's serving the existing customer base is probably not happy with a disruptive business. So you probably need to, how to say, exclude it and put it in a separate team or organization or a shorter organization. Yeah. Understanding that, how do you help, or how do you, how to say, if you go into a bigger organization and try to help them, what are the right key players you contact to? Is it, because it's probably not only the innovative people who have the ideas. Who is the most critical one partner. You need to fight for, you need to partner with, whatever it might be.
From what our experience has been, is it really is top down, right? So if the top management doesn't have that vision and doesn't have the buy-in for this type of, yes, we actually need to do things differently, then even if you have your innovators, people inside the organization coming with great ideas, most of the times those ideas don't go anywhere, right? They get stuck somewhere in the bureaucracy, in the chain. And so it really has to be this kind of top-down decision to say, okay, as top management, we don't have all the ideas. We don't know actually, where everything is going, but we're willing to shift the way that we think about how to do innovation. And we're going to put our money behind that as well. Mm-hmm. And then you try to start changing the culture from the top down, right? So what's our attitude toward failure, right? So we say in incremental innovation, usually you don't want to have too much failure. But if you're going after something big, there's going to be a lot of failure, right? How are we okay with that? In fact, do we embrace that, right? Are we okay with, longer term KPIs that are not focused on, okay, what's our quarterly results, right? And can you have separate metrics that specifically look at longer term returns, not short term returns? And how do we think about learning as an organization, right? So failure breeds learning, trying something breeds learning. But if the focus is on, financial results or success, then people are actually not going to learn because they're only going to do the things that they know. So how do you start breeding a culture that is really focused on, okay, I'm okay with spending some money, or I'm okay with actually things that don't work out, as long as we're learning something and that learning is shared throughout the organization. So then I would say start with that top down, okay, who can I get in top management to really buy in on this? And then start filtering that down from a cultural perspective. What are the small things that we can change inside the organization to say, we're going to do things differently. We're not going to do things as we've done all the way before.
So at the end, of course, when you do not have in your company, let's say, a structure that you can fall and fail, this kind of startup or entrepreneurship could not, stay alive in a bigger company? This is what you said?
I mean, I think a lot of times, especially for these kind of disruptive projects, you know, if you're looking at from a corporate startup, so you know, I want to do something that could potentially become a major division or a major part of our business in the future, right? But there's going to be some pushback from inside the organization. So there has to be some protection from top management to say, yes, we are willing to go down this road, even if it costs us a little bit in the short
term. Yeah.
And that message has to be clear to the entire organization, right? And how do we get everyone to buy in on what we're doing? Or else what we see in a lot of organizations is that, well, you have middle management or you have other divisions who kind of unconsciously go around to stop what that, you know, project is doing because they see it as a threat to their way of life, right? Their way of doing things. It could be taking away their customers or it could be, you know, forcing them to change. Yeah. And change is hard.
Well, looking in, I could imagine, and still, to be honest, there come some pictures in my mind. Or some,
true.
Yeah.
So I feel like you have some experience with some of this pushback when you say that.
Yeah, let's say of course, we have to also think about new projects, products. In-house, and of course we come from a traditional business, and I will not say pushbacks, but of course we have the same challenges as the whole market has. Mm-hmm. So we have to rethink about products. We have to produce new products and go, let's say, in new ways. And I can say Inga and myself are happy that we can look into this direction based on what we are doing today. For me, this is destructive to go in this direction. Otherwise, to focus not on new innovation, that makes, of course, no sense for me for the future.
Yeah, but we see it especially when you do innovation for let's say probably not as a new product, but for new processes, for different kind of how you would like to working, that you of course need. Everything what you're doing is compared to the existing solution. So
of course,
if you are in see some benefits in I don't know new technology, you still get feedback from the team. Yes, but this option is missing, or we don't have these blah 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 anymore. So I totally so that's why let's say separated, and especially if you do new products on a. Even in a corporate, but on a kind of greenfield, that it's much more easy than integrating new ideas into an existing corporation, into existing processes.
Let's say, and the system is already running. Let's say when you want to change something or put something in, of course,
there's more risk. There's more risk involved, right? Because
yes.
You have something that's going already. You already have existing momentum. You already have existing processes, right?
Yeah.
And so if you want to change anything, everyone is first going to look at the risk side of it. They're not looking as much as the benefit. Like, what am I going to lose, right? Change, I think intrinsically, we as humans, we think of change at first as a loss. Okay. We see that, you know, what do we lose when something changes? Before we think about what do we gain? And so it's part of how do we help people to adapt better to change, right? Innovation is essentially about change because, yes, we're trying to bring something better, but it requires people to change how they do things how they look at
things.
I
agree, yeah.
And I think the other part that's really critical within large companies is, still despite kind of this move toward agile and cross-functional teams, you know, corporations are still very siloed, right, in how, in terms of departments and how business is done. It's more streamlined that way. Because everyone understands their role, but ideas are not being shared within the organization. And history has always shown that innovation flourishes in an environment where ideas are freely shared and where ideas can be built on top of each other. Right? One person doesn't come up with a great idea on their own. It's actually this exchange and this hotbed of innovation is when people can talk about and actually build ideas on top of each other. And most corporations are actually not structured that way to have those ideas shared across different departments and divisions and even geographies.
Yeah. Jason, do you have an idea how many, let's say, from your potential or from the projects? I would not say fail, it's probably the wrong word, but what are you doing if you noticed when you try to support an organization, say, you know what, we will not get to that culture change? Is it how to say something where you just say, you know, dear Mr. MD, you better run your existing business as long as you can do.
Extract as much as you can and then move on.
No experience, you mean?
It has happened. I mean, we, a lot of times what we see, and especially some, companies that come to us, they really see innovation as more of a PR game. They see this more as, okay, we want to explore the employees' benefits. They don't see it as, hey, this is an investment in our future. And from that perspective, I think if you have the wrong perspective about innovation, if you have the wrong perspective about all these kinds, you know, everyone likes to say, oh, we want to work with startups, or we want to have great ideas, or we want to empower our employees to come up with great ideas, right? These are nice things, but if you're not willing to put in the work, and it doesn't happen overnight, right? The culture doesn't change, you know, in a day or even in a year. Some companies we've worked with for 4, 5, 6 years, and we've seen how that investment pays off in the long term. But some companies just don't have that patience. They say, well, what do I have now? And if you don't, well, I don't know. Well, then, you know, a couple years down the road, it might be too late.
I could imagine, especially the patient is, you know, I don't know, you probably, even if, I don't know, you probably have a bad quarter and the numbers are not at that level where you wanted to be. And then, well, do we really need to have that? Or do we nearly need we are already working 6 weeks on these new ideas and we still don't make money with that.
But let's say you can have, let's say from out of 10 ideas, you could have 9 of, let's say, that will come not to the end. And the one is the one you can rely on and you can build something new on this one. But if you do not try, of course, then you get nothing so far.
No risk, no fun.
It's easy for us to say.
This is what you said.
Yeah. I think that's a big part of it. It's like sometimes you get lucky and the first one you try works out, but a lot of times it doesn't work out that way. And do you have the perseverance, the patience to wait for the one that works out? And that's not so easy. I understand there's pressure on management, right? From the board, you know, they have financial results and it's easy to cut funding to innovation because it doesn't pay off right away. So if you need short-term results, that's one of the things you're going to cut.
Do you have experience, let's say, is these culture more easy to integrate in corporation, let's say, which are, family-owned, so to say, or which are really public or bigger organization? Do you see any difference there?
We've worked with some, you know, very large corporations. We've worked with some family, you know, more top-down family organizations as well. I think it's really about vision, you know. So, I think it doesn't differ as much in terms of structure, but really about vision. Where I see the major difference is companies which understand, who are a little bit more desperate, are usually a little bit better at it. Meaning, if they can feel that their sector is stagnant, or that there's some, you know, more imminent threat, or their business is already starting to decline, they feel that desperation a lot more. If, you know, when their business is growing, everything is doing well, they're making a lot of money, then there's not as much of that urgency, right? And then it becomes more of a PR game.
Yeah. I could imagine,
And for me as well, when let's say the method is proven once and there is success with one project, product, whatever, then the acceptance, let's say, from the surroundings are much more on your side, and it's easier to go forward with another idea, another innovation, I would say.
And also even within the sector, if you see another competitor who has done it and they're forging ahead with something that they developed and you're falling behind, you know, that FOMO always works well. Fear of missing out feels like, I don't know what I'm doing. What are we doing wrong? When we first kind of started this sector back in 2015, there was no companies really using entrepreneur methodology here in Turkey. We were able to get a few early success stories, as you were saying, Christian, and that really spurred on the industry because everyone's like, hey, what are they doing? we needed to be doing something too. We don't want to be missing out.
Yeah, if let's say if the pressure comes from the market and you see, okay, the other ones are starting in some direction with something, of course, then it's also you will let's say start the engine and do it in the same way.
Hopefully.
Or you can just sit back and just keep raking in your returns until it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Do you have guidance when how to say you imagine? So I guess Christian and I have a lot of conversation, try to have or build up or create new ideas. Of course, yes. Not every idea will end up in a new innovation or in technology or in a product, but to find the right time when to stop to work on that idea. You know, this is sometimes hard. We say, okay, you know what? We have that idea and we know the market need it and we know it, but we try to bring it to customer. But at one point you need to say, okay, you know what? Probably we are wrong. And is it something where you can help and some guys say, you know what? Don't invest too much energy, money, resources into new innovations when there is no interest, or when really to get the feeling, okay, you know what? It's probably the idea from the team, but not from the market.
But let's say then let's say what you are also describing is also let's say market analysis to do horizon screening to say, okay, this is needed from the market and this is something we have to look into.
I mean, I see this a lot in a lot of companies that we work with. I call them zombie projects. They're like the Walking Dead, right? So they're actually those.
We have a name for it now.
Those projects are dead. Just nobody's willing to admit them. Dead, right? And I think especially when it comes, you look at startups as the same way. I think innovation projects are the same way. It's really about momentum, right? If there's momentum, market momentum, where you're getting feedback from the market, right? You're building something, people are giving, you could be going in the wrong direction, but you're getting feedback and you're trying to figure out what is the right way, right? If there's momentum carrying the project forward, if there's continued new learning, if there's continued, feedback and there's something that's being developed, yes, you might not get positive feedback at the beginning because you're going down the wrong path, but that momentum helps you to find what the right path is. Right? When you know when a project is dead was when the momentum is dead, right? I see, it's when the team meets on a, let's say a weekly basis or 2 week basis, and they're just sitting around talking and having coffee, right? Mm-hmm. There's no market momentum. There's no feedback. There's no learning. They're just sitting around, hey, we have this project and we're supposed to talk about it. And you got to kill it off.
Okay. Yeah. Good point. Because I'm afraid a lot of these projects exist somewhere around and say, we have an idea here or this, we're working on that. And as you said, you're probably sitting together in your weekly meeting, say, well, let's open our dashboard and let's open our whatever project plan. And
action number 14 is at what status? But it's for me, it's also linked to experience. And let's say it's the magic behind and the success behind to decide, okay, now it's the time to kill this one off. Or let's say put it in the shelf and take it out again in 2 years when, let's say, the market is ready for it, something like this.
Yeah, sometimes you're too early, huh?
Sometimes.
That timing is critical. That's one of the things that people don't talk about enough. Everyone focuses on the team, the idea, being able to build something. But timing is one of those lucky things that you kind of fall into or you don't. But that's the whole idea of what you guys think. You got to try different things. Sometimes you're going to get it right. Sometimes you're not going to get it right.
Let's say my last question would be, we see that, let's say, in the middle of Europe, we do not that much investments in this direction from the market. We see it in the US, we see it in Asia. The only thing what pops into my mind is Spotify in Sweden, who, let's say, comes into this big tech area. But let's say middle Europe is, I will not say empty, but it's not the big players. And do you have an idea why, let's say, the middle Europe is not so willing to invest in fancy new ideas?
So I know that we're talking to Germans, so, and you're going to share my contact information, right? So there, hopefully people will not harass me later. But But my perspective, this is just my personal opinion. So
no, it's good.
Not based on scientific.
No, no, go.
We can just cut it.
One, I would say, I think generally Europeans are risk averse, right? And, you know, that's talked about a lot, but a lot of studies have shown that, you know, that there's this things are going well, you know, generally everybody has a, you know, has a good income. And so there's not that urgency to take as much risk in Europe. Right? Secondly, I think culturally speaking, then you would say, well, what about America, right? Why does the U.S. have, you know, such a strong startup scene? And why is it not as strong, for example, in Europe? In the U.S., there's much more of this link between, I would say, hard work. You can kind of raise yourself up. You can work really hard and you can create your own success. And it's really based on individualism. In Europe, a lot of it is a little bit, everyone's kind of at the same level and everyone's doing well. And so there's not, it's even, you know, people work hard, but only within certain hours. I always complain about in Europe, like you know, after a certain hour, you know, stores are closed, you can't get a coffee because you know, everyone's just used to a certain way of living, right? They're not as flexible with to try to pursue something. They're happy with their way of life, their standard of life. I think startup requires a little bit of that urgency, a little bit of that passion, a little bit, hey, I want to be able to.
Passion and to get hungry, to get.
I get to be hungry. You got to be willing. Like, yeah. I want to change something, right? And in fact, I think Europe is about it's about not changing. It's about protecting the status quo, culturally speaking, is what I've seen. I'm not from Europe. So again, this is just an outsider's perspective.
That's the reason why it's a good perspective, because if we ask somebody from let's say in our environment, then it would not make sense. So from your, it's a better view on it.
So a little bit about that. Yeah, like I said, protecting what you have, protecting the status quo, yeah, keeping that going. Versus startup is about disruption. It's about, I want to change how things are completely. And so it requires a different perspective on how you want to live your life. We always talk about, you know, startup founders, you're working 80 to 100 hours a week when you first get going. How many people in Europe are willing to work 80 to 100 hours a week, right? Are you willing to give up your vacations in August, you know, when or your Christmas, you know, time off?
Never.
And so then
it is, let's say it's all linked, of course, to the passion for your idea, for your innovation, for your company, or let's say for your startup. At the end, then for innovation,
and then, you know, if you said, "Hey, I'm not going to take any vacations," people would think you're crazy in Europe. If you're saying in the U.S., people celebrate that. You know, the startup founders are like, "I didn't take any vacation for the last 2 years," and that's what they people celebrate that, right? I'm not saying there's an unhealthy aspect to that as well. I'm not saying that's the ideal world, but
I guess that's really a big, how to say it. There's a difference. If you run your own business, you are probably that passionate and be a startup and have a, let's say, the whole team notice the success. But if you're probably part of an organization and you get a secure monthly salary why should I do overtime? I probably do not get paid for overtime.
Exactly.
By the way, Christine, I don't ask. Do you get paid?
It paid is the thing when you get money on your bank account at the end of the working month. This is what you mean.
Yeah, no, I just have free lunch, a free meal to the canteen. That's my.
Yes. No, as I said, that was my last question. I don't know, Ingo, do you have another one?
I have so much, but looking at the time, and Jason, many things. I really feel that you are a great partner to have here and to talk to about these topics.
I forgot something again.
We forgot it.
Because of the reason we are sitting in the canteen, and we really like to share, let's say, funny canteen stories from our guests, because of normally, when you go into a canteen, maybe at the customer stage or somewhere else, sometimes funny things happen. And I just sent the question to you, Jason, if there is anything from your end you want to share to the public, what happened, maybe funny, if you have a funny canteen story,
to you or to colleagues, to whatever.
a funny canteen story.
Yes.
But probably canteen restaurants.
because we started the first episode with our funny canteen stories. And yeah, we really like to, if you have some, I don't know.
Well, I have a funny cultural canteen story.
Oh, please share it to us. Yeah.
So several years ago, we were doing a project with a company in the Netherlands. And it was kind of this cross-cultural exchange, Turkish students, Dutch students. Right? And we took a bunch of Turkish students to the Netherlands to do this project. And, you know, they hosted us at the company Turkish student in Turkey, people like to have these big hot lunches. Okay, so they have, you know, if you've been to Turkey before.
I guess I know where it's going to.
but in the Netherlands, and I think in much of Europe, lunch is usually maybe a cold sandwich and a drink to that effect. And so the company was nice. They gave us these tickets and they said, look, you can get whatever you want from the canteen. And our students, you know, rushed into the canteen and they loaded up their trays with all this food that, you know, and they use their tickets and they exit the canteen. The second day, the company comes back, you know, after 2 days, the company comes back to us and they said, you have used our lunch budget for the entire week in the first 2 days. Can you tell your students not to eat so much? And so the third day, I had to literally stand by the cashier.
Just a sandwich.
And tell the students, put the food back. Put the food. You can't eat that much food. It's a cultural difference.
Typical in the Netherlands, if you're in a canteen or if just let's say for a lunch break, you just get probably sandwiches with cheese and a glass of milk.
Yeah.
Really?
Several times when I've been in the Netherlands, which is okay, but
you it's know, not that much as you have in Germany.
Compared to the lunches in Turkey, you know, everyone's you get your soup, your main dish, your dessert, your salad, and it's kind of this huge thing.
Cultural
misunderstandings.
Not to talk too much about Turkish food. I'm getting hungry again. Jason, many thanks for being with
many
us.
Many thanks. Thank you very much.
Very interesting. If you want to reach out to Jason, you get all the contact details in the notes.
Send me your angry emails about why I misunderstand European culture, startup culture.
Then we have next time a chance to have a second podcast just to read out, let's say, these emails.
It's also fun.
Jason, many thanks to being with
many
us.
Many thanks to you.
Yeah,
it was a good conversation. You guys have a good
day. Would like to keep in contact.
Yeah, same here. Bye bye.
Okay. Have a nice evening. Bye bye.